Kanga Audio.
If you enjoy the stories on this podcast, you'll also like the stories in my book, Filmmaking Confidential, which isn't just for filmmakers, but also all artists and really any entrepreneur. Now an Amazon.com and Audible.com bestseller. I just want to say thank you to all of you who ordered it. If you haven't yet picked it up, it's available wherever books are sold in most countries around the world. Order it by visiting Audible or Amazon. To find out more, check out filmmakingconfidential.com and stevebalderson.com. And thank you. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. Every week, we meet with filmmakers, writers, actors, artists, and other notables. Today's guest is cult icon Mink Stoll. Mink is best known for her work in the films of close friend John Waters. Her film career began as a party guest in Waters' film Roman Candles, then came Pink Flamingos, Female Trouble, Hairspray, Crybaby, and Serial Mom, to name a few. Mink also appeared in my film Stuck, a black and white women's prison movie set in Macon, Georgia.
You have been in some of the most salacious things ever made, but there's nothing really salacious about you.
No, there really isn't. I don't do vulgar, really. I mean, I can play vulgar, but I don't really do vulgar in my personal life.
Right.
Unless I'm provoked, and then I can. But it's not my normal way of being.
Well, exactly. And that's why I like working with you, because you're not a prima donna and you're not, you know, like, you don't throw things, do you?
I have been known to throw things. It hasn't happened in... John Waters will tell you a story that I threw a saxophone at him when we were doing Pink Flamingos, but I don't remember it. You know, I was so mad at him for one reason or another. It wasn't during filming. But it was just I threw a saxophone down the stairs at him. But I don't remember this. But yeah, I've been known to. I can pitch a tantrum. I just don't want to. You know, it's not my favorite way of being or behaving or feeling.
No. My first couple of movies, the AD was terrible. I mean, they just screamed at people and they were just nasty, like most of them are.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working for me. And then I, you know, was sitting with them and I said, oh, can I see your... You know, can you hand me that pencil? And they handed it to me. And I said, now, what if I had said, give me the goddamn pencil? You know, it's like you might give me the pencil, but you don't want to.
Right, exactly.
So I'm like, you know, the makeup girl is trying as hard as she can. And if you're yelling at her, she's going to be shaking while she's doing the makeup. And that's not effective.
It's not making things go faster.
No.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Okay. Were you roped into being in movies or did you want to?
Oh, I wasn't roped into it. I was invited and I accepted eagerly. But it was an invitation. No, I was never roped. When I met John Waters, you know, I was 18 years old with no clear plan for the future. I mean, I'd known him for, you know, a few months and he said, I'm going to make this movie. He had made one movie, one 10-minute black and white 8mm film. So he wasn't, you know, a famous filmmaker when I met him. And he said, I'm going to make this movie. Do you want to be in it? I was like, yes, of course I want to be in it. Who doesn't want to be in a movie? So, no, I was invited and, yes, happily accepted the invitation.
Cool.
Yeah. So I was very fortunate.
Had you done any acting, like stage or anything before?
No. It had been kind of on my mind as a kid. To, you know, my mother used to say that she was going to enroll me in these children's acting things, but it just never happened. Like I said, I had no clear plan for my future. So the idea of doing anything specific I didn't have that. You know, I don't know what would have happened to me. I would probably have become a really bad criminal and spent my good years in jail. I don't know. You know, I was eager for adventure, but I had no way of knowing how to have one.
Right.
So.
How many of the early movies were all made in Baltimore?
All of them.
Really?
Oh yeah, all of them. And they still are. I mean, all the way through, all of them have been made in Baltimore. There are parts of Crybaby that had to be reshot that got shot in LA. I wasn't part of that, but they got shot out here. But nothing that I was involved in. But no, all the movies are in Baltimore.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Well, Baltimore is kind to John. Baltimore loves John. Once the notoriety became fame, the notoriety became celebrity and became, mainstream, I guess after, even before Hairspray, the city embraced him. And he's embraced for his loyalty to Baltimore as much as for anything else. He still lives there.
When I made movies in Kansas, I wasn't famous necessarily, but I noticed that in my little town there, people were, because they know you, and so it's like, oh yeah, we want to help out. Or
yeah, it's yes, you can, as opposed to no, you can't. I was never behind the scenes, so I don't know what John would say to people to get them to let him do things he wanted to do. I have no idea. He can be very persuasive. He's a very charming and convincing man. But I don't know how he got the warden of the Baltimore City Jail to let him go in and film scenes in the actual jail.
Right.
But he did. Probably if he'd been in New York, he wouldn't have been able to walk into the Tombs, for example, but he could do it in Baltimore.
Right.
So, it's nice to be loyal and have a stake in a place. Well, you know that.
Yeah, exactly. I never ventured out of Kansas until we made Stuck.
Right.
And the only reason I did was because when I went to that film festival and met those people and saw the town, I felt similar. Like I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of what it's like at home.
Yeah.
So I felt comfortable enough to go.
Speaking of Macon, did you see the new Borat movie?
No.
Oh, honey, there's a scene that takes place at a Macon debutante ball. That is worth seeing. I'm not going to tell you about it, but it's Macon, Georgia. And all I can think of is, I've been there. I don't know those people. I liked Macon. We had a great time.
We totally did.
Yeah, we had a good time with Stuck.
Yeah, and you and I had known each other, I don't remember how we met, but I know it had been a number of years before.
I remember going out to dinner one night at this Moroccan place and Margaret Cho was a belly dancer there. Yes. And I think Pleasant was with us, and maybe
Jane.
Pleasant and Jane.
I was talking about making a crazy holiday Christmas family movie that's sort of a caper and ridiculous. And I wanted to get everybody together. So we went to this Moroccan belly dance restaurant. So Margaret was like, it was her first night performing. Like there were a group of belly dancers, but it was the first time they were going to perform in front of people publicly.
Was that it? Okay. So it was Margaret's recital night.
Yes. And she was talking to me about being in the movie too. So I thought, well, why don't we all just go? Cause and just experience this. And it was such a crazy, weird place. And I loved that place, and it closed down at some point, but that was fun. Okay. So my favorite out of although I still haven't seen all of Desperate Living and I found it. It's on Amazon Prime, which is so exciting. I was going to watch it last night and just to have it all the way through just for the hell of it. But I thought, oh no, just wait until later. Cause I don't.
Should I give you the spoiler? I do get killed.
Oh,
I know. But that was my fate in all of those films. I didn't get to live until I got to live in Hairspray. After Hairspray, I got to live. But in all those other movies, it was like, how are we going to kill her off?
So, that's so amazing. Did you ever lose your voice?
I actually never did. But, we only filmed on weekends. We would film on weekends and then have the week off. So, I'd scream for a weekend and then be able to go home.
Right.
Yeah. But no, I didn't because I only did one take. I wasn't doing take after take after take of those, especially at the beginning. At the beginning of Desperate Living, where I'm screaming at the kids and stuff, I was only doing one take. So, I didn't have to scream all day. I just had to scream for the length of the scene.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I was very good at one take.
I know.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I had to be. I mean, that was kind of a requirement to work with John. You had to be able to do it the first time because the budgets were so tight and film was so expensive that unless something really fucked up, he was going to use it.
Here's Mink Stole in John Waters' classic Desperate Living.
Don't tell me I don't know what Vietnam is like. Rats! Rats! Rats!
Oh, Mom! Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Grapple. I'll pay to the window out of my allowance.
How about my life? Do you get enough allowance to pay for that? I know you were trying to kill me. What's the matter with the courts? Do they allow this lawlessness and malicious destruction of property to run rampant? Go home to your mother. Doesn't she ever watch you? Tell her this isn't some communist daycare center. Tell your mother I hate her. Tell your mother I hate you.
Okay, my favorite out of all of them was Serial Mom. And especially Dottie Hinkle. Dottie Hinkle was my favorite.
Really?
Yes.
You know, I do love Dottie. She was so vulnerable, and she was just, you know, the whole movie, the whole incident with Dottie Hinkle hinged on the fact that she inadvertently took a parking place. It was inadvertent. And, you know, Kathleen Turner, I loved working with her, by the way. She was really, really fun. She had a great time. She loved the role that she was playing, which was kind of one of the best things she'd ever done, I think. And so when you're working with people that are happy to be there, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, when people are just really happy to be doing what they're doing. And she was. So, I mean, generally John Waters has a happy set, like you do. You know, you foster an atmosphere of we're going to work, but it doesn't have to be hideous. Right. You know, there's still a moment to, you know, for a giggle to the side. But yeah, I loved Serial Mom. I thought Dottie was, she was so vulnerable until she finally lost it.
Yes.
And when she lost it, that was even more fun.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you hereby solemnly swear or affirm under the penalties of perjury that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mrs. Hinkle, did you ever receive any obscene telephone calls?
I certainly did.
And did you recognize the voice of the caller?
Not at first. But then I heard the same inflection in a voice at a social gathering. And I put two and two together.
Whose voice was it, Dottie?
It was her, Beverly Sutphin, sitting right there. I'm lucky I'm not dead.
Mrs. Hinkle, do you drink?
No, I don't.
So you were not drunk when you received those allegedly obscene phone calls?
I certainly was not.
Now, you mean to tell me that the day I came over to Mrs. Ackerman's, the day you claim you recognized my voice, you were not drinking?
One beer with lunch is hardly drinking.
So you do drink?
Socially. I'll have a beer.
So you admit you just lied?
No, I don't, you bitch.
Watch your mouth, Mrs. Hinkle.
Did you see that? She just said fuck you to me.
Let the record show I am merely standing here.
Fuck you too, you fool.
I'm warning you, Mrs. Hinkle. One more obscenity and I'm going to charge you with contempt of court.
Mrs. Hinkle, are you insane?
No, I'm not, you motherfucker!
Mrs. Hinkle, I find you guilty of contempt, and I sentence you to $1,000 fine and 5 days in jail.
Cocksucker! You lousy pig fucker! You bitch! You ugly whore! Let go!
That was Mink Stole, starring in Serial Mom, opposite Kathleen Turner.
It's always so much fun for an actor to play the really strong feelings, you know, being nice, being pleasant, you know, just being deep to do to do is harder. It's a lot harder than right. being angry or sad. You know, the strong emotions are just kind of, they're easier for a lot of us.
Totally.
Yeah.
I love Billy Clift and Joshua Grinnell.
Yes, I do too. Billy Clift did Hush Up, Sweet Charlotte. I loved my character in it. Mm-hmm. I did. Oh, I had so much fun playing that role because it was the Agnes Moorehead part, you know, more, you know, hey, Miss Missy. You know, so I had a really, really good time playing, you know, this crone, this real hag. You know, I enjoyed that very much. The Joshua Grinnell movie was all about evil.
Yeah.
Which is a great title. That was a very different process because we night shoots, you know, I was tortured in that movie. I mean, my lips were literally sewn shut. I had a prosthetic made that covered my lower face, you know, and covered my lips and covered my lower face. And it was just a very thin prosthetic film. And Natasha Lyonne, she sews that shut, but I still couldn't open my mouth. You know, my lips did not have thread in them, but my mouth was still sewn shut. For hours at a time, I couldn't speak. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. The hardest part was not being able to speak because I'm kind of chatty. I mean, I was scribbling things. I had a notepad, you know, I had a notepad and paper, and the filming was going slowly. And I had this major scene that I had to shoot before we lost the night. We were in the library for one night, the San Francisco library. And I had a scene where I had to jump through dive through a bookshelf. And we were going to lose, you know, the light was going to come. The sun was going to come up. The shoot was going really, really slowly. And I'm scribbling frantically, speed the fuck up. What's going on? You know, what's keeping us? That was hard.
Legendary actress Mink Stole. Another fantastic guest is Her Royal Highness, the Princess of Hollywood, Pleasant Gaiman.
So we got the boob prosthetic on and we're shooting in September in Kansas and it was super humid. I was getting ready to leave the trailer. I opened up the screen door and I started coming down the steps and the boob just like jumped off my chest because all the glue and mortician's wax and latex and everything we used to get it put on there just melted from the humidity and it just plopped into the mud at George the Giant's feet. He picked it up and said, I believe this is yours. And I was like, give it to me.
You can hear my full interview with Her Highness at filmmakingconfidential.com or by subscribing for free to this podcast. More from my conversation with Mink Stole right after this. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. Today's guest is cult icon Mink Stole.
Had you always been a singer your whole life?
No. I mean, I was always a shower singer. I always enjoyed singing. I was very lucky. I mean, I've been very lucky in my life that I have met people who have given me huge opportunities. And I have a friend named Brian Grillo, who is a musician and an artist. Look him up on Facebook. He does wonderful paintings and things. Anyway, he was a rocker. And he came to a play that I was doing here with the LA Women Shakespeare Company. I did a play called The Winter's Tale. And I had to sing in it. I played the peddler and I had a little song. And he said, oh, I'm writing a song and I, you know, do these shows at this, at the, you know, some beer bash in Silver Lake on a Sunday afternoon, you know, some gay club, would you come and sing a song? And I said, yes. So he had written this song and he introduced me to a couple of musicians and we performed it and I had a really good time. And then he introduced me to some more musicians and he actually put a band together for me. So
amazing.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I dedicated my album to him for that. But anyway, I mean, the musicians that I work with over the years have changed, but I've worked with musicians who were far, far better than I was, which is kind of good. I didn't really take it seriously until I decided I wanted to do an album. And then I started really paying attention and doing vocal exercises and really working hard on it. I've gotten a little bit away from it lately, but I still, in my bunker, nobody can hear me. So I can come down here and do my exercises. And if I eat a bit of a gummy, I'll come down here to sing my little heart out. So.
Amazing. Well, I think the album is outstanding.
Thank you. I'm very, very proud of it.
Like bang, bang. Right. First of all, do you speak French fluently or just for the song?
No, I don't. I can speak a little bit of French. I studied it in high school, but I worked on the accent. I had a French friend who went over everything with me so that my pronunciation was good. And my pronunciation was always better than my command of the language anyway, so when I'm actually have been in France and, spend 20 minutes formulating a sentence and say it, my pronunciation is so good that I get a rapid fire response that I have no clue what they're saying.
Hey, qu'on dit en vain d'une autre, on ne sait à qui la faute. Tu ne m'avais jamais menti, avec elle tu es parti. Bang, bang, tu m'as quitté. Bang, bang, je suis resté. Bang, bang, et ce bruit-là. Bang, bang, je ne l'oublierai pas. J'aperçois des enfants se poursuivre en s'amusant et faire semblant de se tuer. Je me sens le cœur serré. Bang, bang, tu me reviens. Bang, bang, je me souviens. Bang, bang, et ce bruit-là. Bang, bang.
That was Mink singing Bang, Bang from her album Do Re Mink.
There's so many good songs on that.
I was very proud of the fact that I spent a great deal of time figuring out and playing with the vocals because I wanted them to be my personal versions as opposed to copycat covers. And I think I succeeded.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think also what I really like about the album is that it's sing-alongable. You know, I tell people, take it in the car. Play it in the car. It's fun to drive and sing. But thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it because I truly loved it. And recording is really, really fun. I had a wonderful engineer to work with and really terrific musicians. So what they would do is the musicians went in, they would lay down all the instrumental tracks. And then I would, one song at a time, develop the vocals and then come in and then I could just add my vocals to the instrumental tracks, except for one song. There's one song, the duet that I do, that was done in the studio with the musicians. That's the only one that the musicians and the vocals were done at the same time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that was cool too. But yeah, thank you.
Have you done a lot of voiceover stuff?
No, I would like to do more.
I don't know. It seemed to me that you had like a total command of your voice. Like the choices you were making?
I worked very, very, very hard at making it exactly what I wanted. But I also remember, you can edit. You can do that with a vocal track. If you have a good engineer, if there's one note that doesn't sound right, you can go back in and fix that.
Right.
So, I sang every note, but not always all at the same take.
Right.
So, but I did sing every single note with no corrections.
Didn't you have a voiceover thing in a David Lynch movie?
I did, but it didn't film as a voiceover. It filmed as a scene. I didn't voiceover it. I actually shot the scene. And then, he cut out the visual and just left the voice, just kept the voice. The voice, it was a bridge. What I said was a bridge from one situation to another situation. So the narrative had to be there. We actually shot a scene in the courtroom, in a mock-up courtroom, but we actually shot a scene. And he was so nice because he, you know, right before the cast and crew screening, you know, that I was invited to, he wrote me, he sent me a note telling me that the scene had been cut so that I wouldn't be shocked. And, you know, so I wouldn't be, you know, sort of blindsided by it when I went to the screening. And I thought that was really nice of him to do. Not yeah, everybody totally. Does that. Yeah.
We've done a few film festivals together.
Yes.
But out Boston. Of all, Boston was great.
Boston was really fun.
So cold, but I remember it being really fun. Out of all the places, film festivals or ceremony style or just showcases, what have been some highlights for you in as far as your film career that you've visited or been a part of?
Oh, gee. I went to the a film festival in Portland. I was there for the I Am Divine film, and that was fun. I've never been to the biggies. You know, I've never been to Cannes. I've never been to the Venice Biennale, you know, to the Venice Film Festival or Toronto Film Festival. So they're all kind of just sort of fun. There was a couple of years ago, Hairspray had its 30th anniversary, the original movie cool. had its 30th anniversary. And there was a kind of a big deal event at the Academy Awards building. And that was fun. The man who is now my boyfriend, my sweetie, you know, was my date for the night. And that was fun. That was sort of we'd known each other for a million years, but that was our first actual date. And so that was nice. Any festival that will have me, I will go. I love going places.
I do too. You know, especially when they're putting us up at the hotel.
Yeah, or something. Exactly. I'm taking piano lessons.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. I've always wanted to learn to play the piano, and I have just started lessons, and I'm doing the tiny baby. I don't know if you know anything about, but it's like I played C, D, C, D, E, D. I mean, it's really, you know, I've just started. I'm in the baby book. Three-year-olds. Learn from this book, but that's it's exciting. Fun. It is exciting. I'm having.
I wonder. I feel like you'll take to it, and I. But then I'm wondering. I wonder if you'll be able to sing while playing, or like, let's say, if you're.
I would like. Ultimately, I don't think I don't know that I will ever be good enough to accompany myself publicly. You know, because that's a whole other. That's a real skill. Mm-hmm. But I would like to be able to accompany myself privately. You know, just play for my own self and be able to sing. And I do find that as I play, I often will sing, you know, C, D, C, you know, so it's, and then, you know, after I practice with the piano, I often will do my vocal exercises as well. So it's pulling me back into just music in general, which is a good thing.
Good.
Yeah.
Is there a crazy story that you rarely get the chance to tell people or that no one asks?
Oh, you mean aside from throwing the saxophone down the stairs at John? I used to get so mad at him because when we were filming Pink Flamingos, we actually lived together in the house that we used for my home and for, you know, Connie and Raymond Marple's house in Pink Flamingos. John and I lived there. And I would get furious because we would film I would film or other people would film anyway, and he would leave and there'd be this mess left behind. And I would get very resentful of this. And I didn't need to be, you know, I chose to be, you know, I mean, it was just kind of, and I forget, I don't know what it was, but there was one day when apparently I got so mad, I threw a saxophone at him. We didn't speak after we finished filming Pink Flamingos. I moved out and then I moved to San Francisco because we just really had been on each other's nerves quite badly. We have since made up. I have told this story, but I do love to tell the story of when I first met Kathleen.
Please.
I was in Baltimore. I was still living in LA and I was in Baltimore for the filming. And I was called to the set unexpectedly. To do makeup testing, which we had never done before, but for some reason it was happening this time. And I was, I didn't have my contacts on, and I was just sort of whisked off to the, you know, makeup trailer. So I'm sitting there in the makeup trailer without my glasses on. And suddenly I feel this presence looming over my shoulder. And this voice says, "Hello, I'm Kathleen." And I was like, ah! but I wasn't really, I was trying so hard to be cool because I was terrified. For some reason, I had heard that she was difficult and I was really nervous. So, and I'm like, oh, you know, so I'm going inside, I'm going, ah, and, but outside I'm going, oh, so very nice to meet you, Miss Turner. But anyway, so that was my first impression of her. I was really nervous. And then a little while later, I saw her on the street. You know, I was standing outside and I had, you know, the costume on and the makeup on and I, you know, and she walked past me and she said, "Well, you do have a certain something." I was like, okay, thank you very much. I got along very well with her, but she was actually as nice as a person could be, but just, "Hello, I'm Kathleen." I don't know whether she was trying to be intimidating. I've talked to her about this many times later, and she doesn't remember it. And she said she was certainly not trying to be intimidating.
No, but that's her character towards Dottie anyway.
Yes. Hello. But I really loved working with her. And I think she's one of the, you know, she's a terrific stage actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really, really good stage actor. So I see her in things whenever I can.
Have you kept in touch?
Not personally, but we do have mutual friends that, you know, we stay connected through. I'm always glad to see her. And she's come to see me in things as well. She came to see a play that I did in New York a few years ago, which I was very pleased.
Cool.
That she did. Yeah.
Legendary actress Mink Stole. You can buy her album, Do Re Mink, from iTunes, Apple Music, or listen to it on Spotify. Our film Stuck can be seen by visiting vimeo.com/ondemand/stuck. Most of John Waters' films can be found on Amazon Prime Video. Tune in next time for more Filmmaking Confidential. It is totally free to subscribe, and when you subscribe, you'll get upcoming new episodes automatically, and you'll have free access to all our past shows. The Filmmaking Confidential podcast is a production of Dakanga Audio and produced by myself and Ella Spencer. Our theme music is composed by Kevin Robles. For more of the Filmmaking Confidential podcast, head over to filmmakingconfidential.com. To learn more of my filmmaking secrets, be sure to pick up a copy of the book, Filmmaking Confidential, available on Audible, paperback, and ebook, wherever books are sold. I'm Steve Balderson. Thanks for listening and spreading the word. Until next time, keep making, keep doing, keep going.